outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, welcome to a special edition of the God Journey. We're going to talk about one of those words you just don't talk about with Christians. It's the P word. We're going to use the P word today a lot. The P word is patriarchy, which I know a lot of my friends hearing the word, they just freak out. Man, this is woke. This is women's lib. This is all that stuff. Joni Menard, who's joining us today on the podcast. Hi, Joni.
Hello, hello.
She posted something a week or so ago, and I thought, man, that's interesting. I'd love to explore that with Kyle, to which Sarah said, oh, great, two men talking about patriarchy. So, okay, we're going to have to invite Joni. No, we willingly invited Joni. Yeah, before we go down this road, just want to remind people, July 9 through 12, we're going to hang out together in Kansas City with Toby. Those of you that want to come talk about just love and what the implications are of that on the faith that we grew up in. And how this may restore faith to a better understanding that Jesus had in mind. And so if you want help with that, you want to experience that, you want to be in conversation with that, with Toby and I, make your way to that. There's a link on this podcast so you can find out the details and join us there if you can. I know it's late. I know it's summer. I know it's Kansas City. I know we're competing with FIFA that weekend, but that is the weekend Toby is here. So we're going to try and make use of it for those of you that can join us. So. Anyway, Joni, welcome to the God Journey again. You've been on here a few times before.
Yes.
You're a woman of few words, I can tell.
Sorry, Wayne.
We get you started. Yeah. Kyle's with us too. And let me just read you what I read that Joni posted. I thought was a great conversation needed to be had here. It was with a little cartoon. Cartoon had a boy and a girl standing there. Boy's eyes are redacted. Girl's clothes are redacted. Big black box over it. It said, she's told to cover up. He's never told to grow up. Ah, pretty provocative. We'll put it on the top of this podcast so you can see what it looks like. This is what you posted something from David Ribalid.
He's okay. A Facebook.
That's about person. Purity culture. It says, purity culture is a system that teaches girls their bodies are dangerous, distracting, and responsible for boys' thoughts. It tells women to cover up, shrink down, carry the moral weight of males. Oh my gosh, what a statement. We'll come back to that. Meanwhile, boys are often taught to guard their eyes without ever being taught to examine their entitlement, emotional immaturity, or distorted theology of sex. It polices her clothing, but rarely confronts his character. It shames her body, but excuses his lust. Oh my gosh, this is not a good process here. This is not holiness. This is misplaced responsibility. At its core, purity culture externalizes sin. It locates the problem in a woman's body instead of addressing the deeper issues of objectification, power, emotional repression, and a lack of formation in men. And the fallout is real. Women grow up disconnected from their bodies. Men grow up disconnected from accountability. Shame replaces maturity. Fear replaces intimacy. Well, this is gonna be fun. Last paragraph. We do not create healthy disciples by teaching girls to manage boys' impulses. We create healthy disciples by teaching men self-control, empathy, and respect. So, Joni, why'd you post that?
You know, I'd like to start this conversation. You know, well, just like you said, patriarchy, you use that word, and most men are defensive immediately.
Yeah, they are.
But I would like to start with talking about what it does to men. I'd like to start with that because I grew up in a family with four brothers. I have all sons. My cousins are all men. It's harmful. It's harmful to men too. And because you guys are living inside of a system that tells you that, you know, your feelings aren't okay. That you can't lead with feelings. That's not strength to me. That's a wound. Right? And I think that's where a conversation can get really interesting. Talking about the emotional suppression, the burden of being a sole authority and isolation from intimacy and community. And you're never allowed to be wrong. And I can start really with a personal story. I can remember being a young mom watching all of these families and these women and men parent differently. The way they nurture is not women. It's not female. And they were uncomfortable with it and would assert themselves into a situation and take over. And, you know, I watched the men disappear. So everybody loses. The marriage loses, children lose, and men disappear.
And how do you mean they disappear, Joni?
They take that message that I'm not doing this right, so I'm not going to.
Okay.
You know, and a really wonderful experience with my own marriage that Kurt was bathing our firstborn and he was doing it by himself, but I was in there, his mom was in there, and his oldest sister, and we were giving him so much instruction. And he turned around and he said, "I'm going to bathe my son. Leave now." And he never talked like that. So, I mean, we just
scurried out of the room.
But, you know, I just know a lot of men weren't able to do that, and that he could do that with me and his mom and his oldest sister was impressive to me. And I just think it's harmful. It's, well, you guys talk about it.
I mean, I would agree with you, Joni, in a lot of regards, especially when it comes to men disconnecting or disengaging from the process. And there's the research, the perspective from sociology right now, and then just my own anecdotal information from either talking with men or just the conversations that I get to have with guys or the observations that I make of marriages and friendships that are around me.
Yeah.
So often the husbands, they try, and then they start to check out. And when they feel like they can't come through, then they disengage. And then that makes things even worse, because then all of a sudden the wives are like, well, what happened to my husband? He disappeared. Like, he's not engaged anymore. He's not attentive. Like, where did he go? And there, unfortunately, there, that's a fairly regular pattern in our culture today.
Yeah. And patriarchy asks everyone to be less than fully human.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's like when Wayne talks, and that's hurting God's kids. Women by shrinking and men by masking up and hardening.
In preparation for our conversation today, I went back in and wanted to listen to, so Brené Brown did this really cool conversation about men, women, and worthiness. Yeah. And I was thinking about your conversation initially, Joni, when you were talking about the expectations for women and what what patriarchy says to them. And the study, so there was a study that Brené Brown references that has been done just within the last 5 years. And there was almost 1,600 women that were interviewed for this study. And the resounding feedback of what it means to be feminine in American culture is thin, nice, modest, and use all of your resources to approve your appearance. That was the top four things that were identified in order to be feminine in within the last 5 years by over 1,600 women across the country. And so, I mean, that's still their lived reality in regards to the culture and the space. And that, I mean, to talk about a diminishment of the people that are around us. And yet then on the flip side, Brené did some conversation and research with men. And she initially, so for the first 7 years of her research on shame, she didn't study men at all. And then she was having a conversation with one of the husbands at a book signing. And he asked, well, why don't you study men? And she's like, oh, well, you know, I'm focusing on women research, except, and she gave a few reasons. And he just looked at her and said, well, that's convenient. And that like paused the conversation pretty hard. And, you know, Brené Brown, she's like, ooh, okay, I better probably check in on this. Well, then it went on, and there was the research that came back from from her research when, or the results that came back from her research when it started studying men, mm-hmm. were the conversation about the lack of emotional safety for men with the women in their lives. And basically the conversation came up of like the synopsis of the research was, the women in my life would rather see me die on my white horse than fall off of it. And so if that's the space that they're required to live in, yeah. then creating that emotional safety, that safe landing zone to be able to allow the women in their lives to be able to flourish and be more of who God created them to be is significantly more difficult. And so, yeah, it's very interesting dynamics. I mean, I love the statement that patriarchy diminishes both sides, diminishes both genders.
It really does. And I sent you guys, there was a little teeny clip she did. I forget who she's talking to. I don't know if it's Adam, doesn't matter, but it's a real short, actually, I can't remember. Brene Brown's one of those people, I think Wayne turned me on to, like her TED Talk came out and he saw the one on shame. And we did a bunch of stuff in our community with, she used to send her stuff for free. We had this huge small group therapeutic work on shame. And I liked this little clip. She said, when a woman can sit with her husband or partner or...
And I have the quote here, Joni. Said, show me a woman who can sit with a man in real vulnerability and love it and love him and prize that as strength. I'll show you a woman who's done her work.
And the opposite is also true.
Yeah, what she said about the man right before that was, show me a man who can sit with a woman in struggle and not try to fix it, but just listen. I'll show you a guy who's done his work.
Yeah. Very challenging space. And yeah, it's true for everyone because we all want vulnerability and we're all terrified of it. So it's that core wound and fear. I think a lot's required of everybody to be able to do that.
And how to get people who get started on that. I mean, oftentimes we talked about this a little before we started recording. It's difficult for guys raised in patriarchy to see it or understand it or acknowledge it. It's just hard. It feels like normal because I've swum in this my whole life. And now when I think about vulnerability, when I think about even the idea of women gaining more traction in our culture, more power, more voice, more showing up. If you're the group that's had the priority in those conversations and you're letting other people who haven't had have that space, it can feel like you're being diminished. Like we've said in Just Love, and I think one of the things that really turns me on to this fairness thing is when someone's unfair to me, I get it. I feel it. I experience it. And it doesn't feel good. When I'm unfair to someone else, when I benefit from the unfairness, I often don't see it. I don't have a clue what's going on until someone is trying to raise the stakes of fairness. And if I have a prior privilege, me losing some of that to make space for others feels like I'm being diminished. And I think that's what I hear from many men, whether it's on the gender issue or the race issue or whatever. By extending power to other groups of people that have had it, it's threatening to those mm-hmm. who have had the power. And it feels unfair, even though it's not, because it's been unfair for a long time. And trying to make it fair feels like I'm being diminished.
Yeah, these things are real hard to see because the mask is so tight. So you can't see because it's a blind spot.
Right.
That's the definition, right, of a blind spot. Until someone is given capacity to mirror back. And I think, Wayne, until it's mirrored back in kind of a safe space.
Yeah.
Right? Where you're not going to be immediately defensive. I mean, that just shuts down everything.
But yeah, that's why passing laws and forcing change often backfires. Mm-hmm. Because the very people you're trying to help can't see that they're being helped. They feel this weight of the law and the accusations and being demoralized by it. And so that even provokes more of the shrinking back or the being disconnected from what's going on instead of doing the work, man, finding your way into a relationship with someone, particularly your spouse, that's level, fair. I was a fix it guy. I, I thought that was kind of the male inclination, but I definitely was a fix it guy growing up, and Sarah'd come with me with a problem and I've got resolutions for it. I've got ways we can do it. And then if she doesn't do it, then I can say she's not serious about fixing it. Instead of she's just wanting to be heard. And it has taken me decades to learn how to listen to Sarah and learn how not to fix it, learn how to be beside her as a companion instead of, I want to fix this so I'm not uncomfortable.
Yeah, I think a lot of, especially in the Christian environment, you know, and then I think I sent you a little clip on the heroine's journey, but I'd like that she brought into that, because I wasn't raised in that hyper-Christian environment. And actually, truthfully, I am probably not the right person to be on here. Because when we did that Brené Brown stuff, Kyle, I did not resonate with the list of what are opposite or shame things for women. There's like a list of 10 things.
Yeah.
But she had that little blurb about that guy. And I think she had a little blurb under there, you know, that men, their main thing about shame is being appearing weak. And that was mine. I was like, that's what I hate more than anything else.
You hate somehow what? You hate
being perceived as weak. It's the power gradient in patriarchy for me. And it's probably because I had all these brothers and I, you know, men weren't a mystery to me. I thought they were easily manipulated. And I did plenty of that.
I hear you. You know?
So, you know, and when this pushback stuff or Me Too started, and I would say, you know, women have used a little bit of this. But because of the system, the only way they got what they needed or wanted was through manipulation.
Yeah.
And so, again, it diminishes everyone. But yeah, and I got, if I brought that up, I got pretty hammered by my female peers, you know, because it was too soon. You know, we have, it's so horrible. We have a president who says it's okay to grab women. I was out on the first one. I was out a nanosecond within that. But that was ever okay to vote for someone like that. When you have wives, you have daughters. I'm like, I don't. Beyond my ability to comprehend. I don't understand that. And even as a young person, you know, I chose not to change my name when I got married. And it was amazing to me, the pushback. Again, in my professional peers, I was working in a science environment. These women would say, you know, my husband would not have married me if I hadn't changed my name. And my response was, and you married him? Why? I have a really different, and I was part of the Equal Rights Amendment movement back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I realized getting ready for this, that my pushback, my deal with this, it has been a passion for a long time. Yeah, my voice will change and my words will fail because I'm like, it's a thing. And I think I was telling Wayne, I sit with a lot of women and I've been with a lot of couples in different situations that this women and people going through deconstruction, that's the biggest thing. When you're going through deconstruction, and you're witnessing and being able to name these woundings from patriarchy, it's a huge thing. Huge healing needed. Huge, just to sit and listen and be with people recovering. It's a huge piece of deconstruction.
Yeah, and you've been, like you said, you've been at this a while. So
I have.
We first come on and kind of open the door to this. I'm more aware in reading some of what I just read earlier of what this has done to women. I think partly being with the 2x2s over the last year and seeing, which I've seen in so many religious groups, the repression of women, the whole idea of shaping how, for them to carry the moral weight of men's temptations, which I think is such, when I read that, I wanted to cry on your post. I just went, oh my gosh. I know it's true. I've watched it happen. I've watched women have to so worry about everything they wear and how they're going to be perceived. And some on both sides of that, both those that are way too conservative, so they're not thought of as a loose woman, and those who are just way too get it all out there because I'm free. And if it's your problem, it's your problem. And I do think it is lust of the eyes is man's problem. It's not a woman problem. And yet we have fixed it exactly the opposite way. And I had one woman ask me, not from the 2x2s, this was another group, just, what is it about my body that makes me disgusting to God? That was her question. This is a 45-year-old woman. And I said, I looked and I said, do you believe that? And she said, I've been taught that. And yes, I believe that. Mm-hmm. And I said, man, there's nothing about your body that's disgusting to God. Men don't cover it up because it's disgusting. Because it's attractive and they don't know what to do with it. And so our approach, because all of our works righteousness is all about trying to do better and not doing and repenting and promising God I won't again. And then I do. And then I've got to repent again. And then am I genuine about my repentance? The struggle that men go through with all of this, and then for women to take that on, oh, it's our fault, or the men told them to, it is your fault. You need to dress in a way or not even drive dually pickups because they're provocative for men. Is that's where my heart hurts less. So it surprised me. You come on, you're first of all talking about how it diminishes men, which it does. I get it. It makes you fit a model that isn't real. You lose your authenticity. You lose your freedom to struggle, to be vulnerable, to not have all the answers. You lose all. I get it. But that's kind of self. I look at that as more self-imposed, what the male does to himself, and opposed to what the males do to women. By diminishing their bodies and their own weakness and temptation.
It's an oppression that women endure.
Yeah, how sad that is. And yet when you posted this, a doctor commented, which I thought was interesting. He said, I fully agree with what you're saying. Here's one thing that is not really addressed. A little hormone called testosterone takes a deliberate and constant effort to train men to govern the normal sexual drives that come with being male. Is that a deal? Is that an excuse? He does say this, simple suppression through shame does not work. And boy, I wish everybody heard that very clearly, whether it's women being shamed for what they wear or men being shamed for the drives that they have sexually and how visualization is a turn on and the struggle with that. But at the end of it, it really comes down to equipping people to be free and to be responsible and not to be victims of the appetites that rage inside of them. And so he mentions testosterone as a deal. And your comment back was, what you say is true and also true of females. Hormones, desires, by biological design. Inside patriarchy, these male problems become the female's responsibility, which you're not saying it is or it should be.
Right. That's how it works out. Right.
Oh, you're way too quiet, man. You work with college kids. You see this unfolding with younger people.
Well, I've just been quietly listening because, to be bluntly honest, this is a very hard conversation for me. I am still very much in the process of having God untangle a lot of this. And there's because in my culture growing up in the religious groups that I grew up in, There was like this really sick and twisted version of purity culture where both men and women were shamed for who God created them to be. So women were shamed for their body and their ability to make men lust. And guys were incredibly shamed for any kind of sex drive, any kind of passion, any kind of expression of testosterone or masculinity. That was seen as evil and toxic and disgusting. And so there was a lot of diminishment, like to the point where, like, the first few years of marriage for Jess and I, it was very difficult for me to be able to enjoy any kind of intimacy with Jess, because the message all my life was, men are sex-driven pigs that will use and abuse women constantly. And it's only by the grace of God if you curve any of that. And so then I'm looking at it like, okay, so my wife has a desire to be with me intimately. I'm told that under the auspice of marriage that all holds are gone and you can do whatever you want and you can enjoy the playground to the best of your ability. But all my life, for the first 26 years of my life, or 27 years before I got married, 27 years of my life, I was told that I am a sex rage machine that has to do everything they can do to try to avoid that, kill that desire, do whatever you can do to suppress it. And man, it was, so there was these two messages, because I also saw the my fellow sisters in Christ being diminished in horrific ways as well. If they had any kind of sex drive whatsoever, then, I mean, the level of shame that got dumped on them was substantial. The preventative shame and fear that was thrown in into their worlds. And so it was just this really twisted, gnarled space. And then I also got the pleasure of entering into the dating world during the highlight of I Kiss Dating Goodbye and the rage rampart that was going on in conservative Christianity. So it's a tough one for me, and especially as a dad of daughters.
I was hoping we were going to talk about that.
Trying to figure out, what does it look like? So I got confronted with this space just 2 weeks ago. I went and did a training with my criminal justice instructor, who is a woman, and she has an extensive background in policing and three-letter agencies that will not be named. And I mean, she is hardcore, to say the least. And she did a training on sexual assault and abuse reporting. And so I went to the training. I was like, oh, I just want to hear her perspective, you know, et cetera. And I ended up getting sat through this training, getting smacked in the face, because I was getting shown some of my own biases. And I was wrestling internally with conversations about my daughters, because one of the reasons why sexual assault and rape often is not reported is because of the victim blaming and how that gets integrated into our culture and just all the different stuff that happens there, etc. And yet I wrestle, because on the flip side, I also want to prep my daughters to make sure that they are shrewd and wise in the way that they're entering the world. And so I want them to know what the risks are of them going to a party. And if they're wearing provocative clothing and if they're drinking excessively, then that's positioning themselves in a place where they are more vulnerable. And there are predatory men that are out there that would want to abuse and take advantage of that. And so helping empower them on the front end of make wise decisions, be on the lookout, have your head on a swivel, because I'm very aware that those things are out there, because I want to prep them. I want to help build in, unfortunately, some of those safety awarenesses and real world perspective of, look, girls, as much as your daddy loves you and will go to the nth degree to protect you and keep you safe, there are a lot of men out there that are not that way. And so I want to prep you and prepare you to have a good lens, a good filter, a good gauge to be able to decide whether I'm at risk or not and how to make good decisions ahead of time. And some people would say I'm victim blaming, that if I'm prepping my daughters to say, don't drink alcohol, don't go to the parties, don't wear provocative clothing, that is me putting the responsibility on my daughters. And from a male's perspective, I'm saying, no, I want to try to build in an awareness of the risks that my daughters, unfortunately, are going to have to face in this world. Because since the dawn of time, there have been predatory men that have been willing to abuse and take advantage of women. And absolutely, if I don't, as a dad, prepare them for that to the best of my ability, then I feel like I'm doing them a disservice.
And would you feel you'd have to do more preparation for them than you would a boy?
The conversation would just be different.
It would be.
It'd be very much about. It would be very much about, what does it look like to honor the people around you? What does it look like to use your strength in a way to help and build up the world? What does it look like to advocate for people who either don't know how to use their voice or are in a place where they don't have a voice? It would be a different type of conversation. Whereas for my daughters, it's, making sure that they know they have a voice, and how do they use that voice, and how do they operate in their own feminine strength, and how do they advocate for themselves, and how do they have a level of awareness in the situations that they're going into that they can decide whether or not somebody's a threat.
Yeah. But one is the awareness as a target, right?
Yes.
And one is the not be the predator, not be the one who's disrespectful. And what is it like, Joni, to grow up with that? I mean, to feel like, because I didn't grow up with the feeling like I am, you know, at risk of some woman doing some crazy thing to me. But women are always aware of that with men. So,
and sorry, before you go in, Joni, just another caveat in that, especially what I have seen in the mental health world and the stories that I've heard, there are predatory women out there as well that will use their own means and opportunity to be able to take advantage of people that are in a lower power dynamic. I mean, look at the occurrence of female teachers in the last 3 years that have been getting terminated for sexually assaulting young males. And the frequency is drastically increasing, unfortunately.
We still don't treat boys as targets.
No, but you know, that's about the power gradient between teacher and student.
Correct.
Right.
But you know, and having that power over.
And horny little boys. Let's face it.
Yeah, that age group. But yeah, I think Curtis and I were talking about this morning about, there's no way as men that you have any idea that to walk anywhere, you don't, even coming into this conversation, you guys were probably not nervous at all.
I was a little bit, I got to tell you.
I prepped Wayne, Kyle, because I said, I'm going to push back a little bit. And he goes, no, just Kyle. Just push back on Kyle.
No, I didn't think.
You did too. But, you know, it's just like anything where there's a difference, and gender is a difference. And there is a physical difference in terms of power and strength, right? I mean, there are some women with physical abilities that I would rather have fighting in we'll never have that kind of combat. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, they're physically more capable than you or me.
Yes, I hear you.
Then I want them at the front. Yes. But most of the time, you know, everywhere we go, self-preserving nature has to be on and awareness. So I don't know. I think there is a way to raise children about this reality, and at the same time somehow not make it their responsibility for the other to behave better, right? I think that's different.
I think I understand what you're getting at, Joni, but unpack that a little bit more for me.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I think there's ways of messaging to girls, all those, that list that Brene, and dads do that. Your girls are going to get a sense of how to relate to male world by how you are with them. So like I told you guys, I just have because of my family of origin, I think my sensibility about that is a little different than most women. And I think because of all the male stuff in my life, I identified more with the masculine and diminished the feminine. And it's rewarded in our culture, you know, to be successful, all of that. So I think that's a little bit of a difference. But one thing I feel like my dad cherished me. A lot of women that I sit with, you come up out of childhood with a couple of different messages. You know, one's usually negative, like your other name. For a lot of women, their dads told them they were too fat, or you're too loud, or, you know, it's this very narrow, we have these very narrow definitions of feminine and masculine. And that's the problem. And I kind of feel like if you can be with your girls and have awareness, I think awareness is 90% of it. Awareness of the message we get from patriarchy, of how you're supposed to be, and you counter that message, right? And my dad would tell me, I felt like I could do anything my brothers could do. I didn't have that differential growing up. And that's a miracle, because I can't tell you how many women that is not the case. Like, and just recently, I have a little group that formed itself, and we went around the circle, and everyone just kind of shared the message they got from their mothers about men. And because the numbers are so huge and underreported, like, I don't think we'll ever know rape and all that stuff because of that. But I probably there were 12 of us in the room, probably half of the mothers had been raped. It is horrific. And so here's the thing. Oh, sorry, it just came to me. What they said was, what they were raised in was a lot of fear of men. And so, you know, nothing good comes from fear.
No, for sure.
Right. A way of relating is that's, you know, so they struggled with that and went out with people that were ridiculous. You know, and I could smell that stuff as a teenager a mile away. I called them Eddie Haskells. That's what our joke in my peer group was. Don't go out with him. He's an Eddie Haskell. Just don't go there. So we all went kind of around a circle and I think there is a way of preparing your girls without making it so terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, and I have been graced with two daughters that have an incredible amount of strength in both of them. So in some regards, I'm mildly terrified for the men that they're going to encounter.
That was my dad's attitude.
but that being said, I mean, I like the conversation about not wanting to, that relationship can't be built out of fear by any means. But
yeah,
here's the challenge. Fear, in some regards, is healthy and is adaptive. And so, if I don't have a fear of the king cobra that's about to strike me and kill me in the wilderness, then that's a problem.
That's a problem.
Or if I don't have a fear to jump into the bonfire that my girls are hanging out around, like, that's also a problem. And so it's like, okay, I don't want to paint the projection that all men, you know, like, you need to be always afraid, but they're like, I'm like, Jesus, how do I live or help my daughters live in the juxtaposition of innocent as doves and shrewd as serpents? Like, that is a challenging juxtaposition to really mentor and teach my girls to live in. That is an interesting space to try to develop and hold for them.
Well, if we move away from the fear thing to talk about responsibility, you know, like when all of us, when we drive, take it out of the whole sexual culture, and just when we drive, you want to be the most responsible driver around, because other people aren't going to be. Right. That whole defensive driving thing. I think the same thing's true in our engagements with other humans. You want to have a better sense of what it means to be respectful and responsible to others, and realize when the people around you don't share that for you, because that does make them more dangerous. But it didn't have to be a fear thing. It could just be a matter of responsibility and being able to say, okay, I'm not comfortable in this environment, so I'm stepping out of it. I'm not blaming me for it. I'm just stepping out of it. At the same time, well, this is one of the things the doctor pointed out in his response to you, too, which I'd want to cover. We so over-sexualize women in our culture to sell products, to draw eyes to a screen. I mean, boys and men are enculturated into the sexual form as an enticing thing for anything. I just attended my granddaughter's final dance showcase, and I'm so glad it's the last one. Every costume that dancers wear at the high school level are overtly sexualized. They're nightgowns, they're, you know, lingerie. That's what they're up there dancing. And they may be, I think my granddaughter's completely innocent of knowing what's going on here, but someone else somewhere decided that we're gonna sexualize women who love to dance.
Yeah.
Because that's what the world wants. And yeah. I think it's a very difficult time to grow up as male or female. It was difficult when I was young too. I mean, that was 50, 60 years ago I was growing up, but there was all that in the world, but now it's on steroids. Correct. And it's on every feed you have and every advertisement, and we've just hypersexualized it. And it really takes the person where I think I've really come to this mountain over six decades of trying to grow up is the whole idea. It's what love changed in my life when not just love here, God loves me great, I can make mistakes and God still loves me, but then how does that love translate to the other people around me? And to be able to see patriarchy through the grid of, well, that's not fair. If you're a woman and you don't have the same opportunity, or you're Black and don't have the same opportunity, yeah, it's just a matter of fairness. And if you can not see the inequities to your benefit, but see the inequities to how do I help people who don't have the same opportunities I have find them, then I don't know how else we learn this, because I don't think anything we're talking about, and which again, back to just love, you can't legislate. You can try, you can put all the laws in place, but the change has got to come in the heart. And only through love, only through being loved, can I love. And then with love, I think comes looking out for the fairness of the other.
Yeah. And healthy boundaries. I think, Kyle, with the girls, healthy boundaries, because so many of these women were not taught that.
Yeah.
So, especially like on date rapes, so many of my friends, I mean, they just assumed that they were supposed to. And as a young person, I was in an Arab country. Mm. And this guy, he assumed I was there to have sex with him.
Are we done? Is there anything more anybody wants to tie up with?
Oh, I mean, I could definitely keep going in this conversation. I feel like we're scratching the surface, but
I am too. I do too.
Because the other thing that we didn't even tap into, Wayne, was one of the reasons why, Joni, that I even wanted to do this conversation right after the last one that we did, was the last one we were talking about desire and what do we do with desire. That's a huge conversation, especially in patriarchy, but in even more so in the purity culture of what do we do with healthy desire.
Hold on. Do you want to come back and do that?
Sure.
Or we can do a part two.
Let's do part two next week.
Okay.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.